Greetings, you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. Well, welcome to you all after the holiday break here, in which we haven't had a show for a couple weeks. We all have a needed rest nowadays. Anyway, today I want to do a year-end in review that I do at the end of the year to discuss the major developments and events of the past year, 2021, and make some predictions for 2022. And I'd like to do that both on the economy and the political scenarios that have occurred and may occur here. So both economy and politics, okay? Politics meaning policies and, you know, what's the fate of U.S. democracy still under attack, in fact, increasing attack, more effective attack than just January 6, 2021 insurrection. But we'll talk about that too, since this is one day after. And we'll talk about, you know, some of the recent developments here in the economy going forward. Okay, let's step back. What are the main developments of last year? Well, going into 2021, the U.S. was poised to fall into a second recession, a double-dip recession. At the end of 2020, it was pretty clear the economy was getting weak very fast. And Congress, having prevented in 2020 any passage of a follow-on fiscal stimulus after the initial CARES Act passed in March 2020, we couldn't get anything passed. It was still the Trump era, the McConnell era, and they said no, no, no. And the rest of 2020, after, you know, the passage of the CARES Act, was really the maneuvers by Trump and the Republicans to prevent any passage of any follow-on stimulus. So the economy began fading in the fourth quarter, both in terms of GDP and in terms of employment, which panicked the policymakers in Congress a little bit. So they passed an emergency fiscal stimulus act, more of a mitigation act, at the end of last year, 2020, called the Consolidation Act, in which they threw in more money to bail out small businesses and new checks here, new stimulus checks to people, and more unemployment benefits, extending the unemployment benefits. And that prevented, in the first quarter of 2021, the economy slipping once again into a recession. They came damn close to that. And then, you know, that was only for 2 months, financing fiscal stimulus for 2 months in January, February of 2021. And then they quickly then passed another mitigation bill called the American Rescue Plan. That was a $1.9 trillion. That was Biden's first piece of legislation here, which kept the thing going. Kept the economy going, you know, another 3-4 months here until they started opening up the economy in May-June of 2021 last year. And then we got a little boost in the economy in the third quarter because of the reopening, not so much because of the stimulus. You know, Biden claimed that the American Rescue Plan passed in March was $1.9 trillion. Well, actually, for this year, 2021, first year, it was really only $800-900 billion, and only about half of that had actually gotten into the economy in the summer. So it was really like a $400-500 billion emergency stimulus, not long large enough to be a real stimulus to the economy in the sense of generating a self-sustaining recovery, but more like a mitigation, buy some more time to open the economy. You see, the strategy, the fundamental strategy of the policymakers, whether Republican or Democrat, just a question of degree between them, has been just to buy some time with some fiscal bills here to prevent the worst collapse from occurring, buy some time till they could reopen the economy. And the economy would reopening generate some self-sustaining momentum. That's always been the real strategy here, you see. Just throw enough at it to keep the bottom from falling out and hope that the recovery will carry it forward. That was the strategy in 2020. And in the third quarter, we had a recovery of part of the loss in the first half of 2021. And it was the same strategy here employed last year in 2021. In other words, let's throw some money out there in the American Rescue Plan, buy some time, and hope in the third quarter the economy really can take off itself. Well, once again, in the third quarter of last year, we did get a reopening of the economy, and we did get a partial recovery of the loss, but not enough to really continue a self-sustaining generating recovery. You see, reopening the economy means you're going to have some good growth because the economy collapsed in the first half of 2021 and first half of 2020. The same scenario 2 years in a row in the first half, same scenario in the third quarter. When you have a reopening of the economy, you get partial recovery back. But what we saw in 2020 in the fourth quarter was the economy almost came to a standstill once again, just like it did in 2019. Okay, so almost a standstill in 2020. And we will see, I think, the same thing here in the fourth quarter of 2021 that just passed. We won't get that information here until another month or so when GDP starts coming through. There are all kind of signs that consumer spending was slowing in the fourth quarter of the 2021. Inflation, of course, taking a big bite out of that. Most of the GDP and growth was inflationary. Consumer spending, they report, it's up. But most of that is price increases, you see. So when you adjusted for inflation, you don't get that big consumer spending going on. Yeah, people are spending more because the prices are rising. Mm-hmm. So that was the picture of last year, which in some ways is very much like the year before. And I've always said, well, that's characteristic of what's called an epic recession, that I call an epic recession, where you get contractions of the real economy and you get short-term recoveries, but they don't last too long and they weaken pretty quick. And then you get a reversion, a relapse back to either stagnant, slow, minimal growth or even negative growth recession. And you bounce along the bottom that way for years. And I believe that's the scenario that we are in. We get these recoveries for a quarter or so, and then we get a relapse. We get a weakening. That was true in 2020. It's true and was true in 2021, as we will see. Whether that continues in 2022 remains to be seen. However, I am not too optimistic we're going to see a robust recovery here in 2022. Because, as I've said, consumer spending was not that strong last quarter when adjusted for inflation. At the same time, there's no forthcoming real stimulus, fiscal stimulus by the government, which is 24% of the U.S. GDP. Consumer spending is about two-thirds. The rest is trade, net exports, and business spending. So you got inflation cutting into consumer spending, and at the same time, you've got a lack of an increase, a follow-on fiscal stimulus occurring here. As I've said before, Build Back Better is dead, is DOA. BBB is DOA, dead on arrival, mm-hmm. right? I've been predicting that all last year that would occur. As we know, Manchin and Sinema senators, Democratic senators, are pretty much shit-canning everything that's being proposed. And as I've said, don't think they're individuals. They represent the corporate wing of the Democratic Party, which is just cheering them on, because the corporate wing of the Democrats do not want any repeal of the massive Trump tax cuts for corporations and investors and wealthy individuals. They don't want that. And if you were to pass Build Back Better, you need to raise taxes to pay for it. You know, to borrow a phrase from the 90s, it's the tax cuts, stupid. That's what all that is about. All that prevention of any fiscal stimulus is about preventing having to raise taxes on corporations and the rich. And that's the real objective of Manchin and Sinema, who are the shills for the corporate wing of the Democratic Party. And, of course, virtually all the Republican Party. They're all united on this. You know, what we see is the results of corporate capitalist business dominance and control of representatives in Congress. They have bought and paid for a majority in both parties, and they are now exercising that majority. You know, the media says nothing about the army of corporate lobbyists, new lobbyists who have descended last year on Washington and knocking on all the doors and pretty much, I'm sure, saying, you know, we don't want those taxes repealed. We don't want the Trump tax cuts repealed. And they haven't been, you see. So they've been very successful in preventing that. You got to look behind the individuals and look behind even Congress itself to see what's really going on here. And, you know, it's really the big corporations who are doing exceptionally well and don't want anything disturbed by reducing Trump's $4.5 trillion 10-year tax cut that was passed in 2018. So they've been quite successful. That's a hallmark of what happened in 2021. Now, of course, you know, the Build Back Better, DOA, but they did pass the infrastructure bill last year with some Republican help. Well, that's because a lot of the infrastructure spending goes right into the pockets of corporations, you see. It's the corporations that build the infrastructure. So they were able to get enough passed, enough support in the Republicans and the Democrats to pass the infrastructure bill, which, however, as I've said on previous shows, was really not that significant. They claim it's $1.1 trillion, but actually it's only $550 billion over 5 years, I think, of new infrastructure spending. And most importantly, the infrastructure bill passed last year. Clearly, if you look at it in the details, is not funded by repealing any of the Trump tax cuts. All the Trump tax cuts remain. It's paid for by a lot of smoke and mirrors, moving money around from this pocket or that, you know, that authorization. And, you know, the 1.1 million claim is really puffed up for the infrastructure bill by throwing in bills already authorized, like the Highway Trust Fund bill and so forth, to make it look like it's $1.1 trillion. But new infrastructure spending was only $550 billion, which they didn't have to raise taxes for, which is what it's all about. Stupid, right? So they got that bill passed. They got some more money in their pocket, infrastructure. They, meaning corporations, right? And they get to keep their tax cuts. So that's the kind of legislation they want. And that's the kind of legislation that Manchin and Sinema are willing to agree to and willing to suspend, if necessary, the filibuster, but not for legislation that actually provides more support for working middle class Americans who really need it, far more corporations. Last year, talking about corporations, they did quite well. The stock markets up 27%. Major U.S. stock markets, 27% increase in the value of the stock markets, right? It would be nice if workers could get a 27% increase in their wages, right? Well, they did quite well. Inflation, you know, officially about 6% last year, actually more like 10%. Consumer price index and even the PCE index. I'm not going to go into explaining why it's 10%. I've done that in previous shows. Just go back, I think, in October or whatever, and listen to my detailed explanation why inflation is really significantly higher than the official 6% here. Of course, that's for consumer goods and so forth, right? Not business goods. You know, 6% and wages up 4.5% about. A lot of that was skewed to the top end. In other words, tech workers and professionals and so forth got the lion's share of that wage increase. A little bit of increase for low-wage service workers. We could have had a significant increase in wages for low-wage service workers if Biden hadn't followed through on his promise, his campaign promise, to raise the minimum wage. But one of the first things he did when he got in office is he met with CEOs, I think a week after his inauguration, of major companies. And then the next day he announced that he wasn't going to use executive order to raise the minimum wage to $15, as he promised during the election he would do. The first of many broken promises here, the campaign promises by Biden and the Democrats. So that was a significant economic development of 2021, refusal to raise the minimum wage. That was one of the first things out of the box, right? Infrastructure spending, yes, that was significant past, but not as significant as they put the spin on it in the media. Only $550 billion, and the effects won't really hit the economy until late next year for even the initial increase in infrastructure spending. Not really very much to stimulate the economy from the infrastructure spending from the government point of view here. And of course, the Build Back Better never did materialize because you'd have to raise taxes for that. And the lobbyists did that in. That's DOA. We may see in 2022, we may see an attempt to resurrect parts of the Build Back Better. They'll break that up and try to get it passed provision by provision. You know, the potential provisions and sections of the Build Back Better that may pass, you know, maybe they may extend the child care credit another 6 months or a year. That's possible. They may continue some of the subsidies to the Affordable Care Act. That's possible. Other provisions are much less likely. They may pass some climate change investment, infrastructure investment. But to do that, they're probably going to have to pass more subsidies and tax cuts for oil and coal to get Manchin to approve that. So, you know, they'll give with one hand to deal with climate change, and they'll take back with the other hand as they subsidize coal companies and oil companies. By the way, coal companies are oil companies. You know, only very, very small coal producers in West Virginia are not owned by oil companies. You know, years ago, oil bought up the competitive energy sources here, whether it be coal or whether it be nuclear or whatever, right? So it's really the big oil companies we're talking about that'll get more subsidies here if there is anything passed that you can identify as climate change legislation this year. Another big event of 2021 development, of course, was the Great Strike of 2021, as I called it, and wrote a piece about that and talked about it on this show. You go to my blog for the print version of that, jackrasmus.com, or I think we had a show in October here on Alternative Visions talking about the Great Strike of 2021, which is a combination of unionized workers walking out at John Deere and Kellogg and a few other places, but mostly the working class withdrawing its labor and not going back to work. Simply put, a strike is when you withdraw your labor and you don't have to be in a union to go on strike. Well, it's pretty clear that workers are trying to look for something better and different, and you can't blame them for that. After working in these service industries, low paid and terrible schedules and so forth, being jerked around, and then the COVID hits, and what we got then is even more jerking around and uncertainty and lack of future. Millennials who, have passed their 30s are saying, hey, this is no future. I can't support myself, let alone a family, on this. I got to find something better. And they've been using, the unemployment benefits and other subsidies here as a safety valve to attempt to find something better. That's what's going on. They're trying desperately to find something better. And, at the upper end, professionals and techs are using it to job hop as well, and quits and looking for new opportunities is also part of the Great Strike of 2021. COVID has really upended labor markets fundamentally, permanently, and we're only now beginning to see how this is so after 2021. We're not going back to the normal. There is no turning back. And the new normal hasn't been clearly defined yet, but it's being defined, and it has a lot of characteristics of some of the events that were imposed on labor markets by COVID here. COVID, by the way, is not over, and nor is its effect on the economy. We saw the surge of Delta, very deadly variant, here last year. And, last year we have, 650,000 new deaths on top of the 220,000 in 2020. Last year, 2021, first year of Democrats, was three times worse than the first year. Very deadly, right? We did get the vaccines out and the boosters. But, we got a third of the people who don't want to get vaccinated. And, evidence is beginning to come out that the vaccines are not all that effective. They have some effect, and what was initially the spin that, get the vaccine and you won't get sick. Now is, you may get sick, but you won't go to hospital or die. That's the new message. And, the inconsistencies in the messaging is only exacerbated the intent of those who don't want to get vaccinated. Why should I get vaccinated? It's not going to help me that much. And, of course, we got boosters. We had to have a booster, which is another indication that the vaccines are not totally preventative, have some effect. Although I would say it seems to me that the Pfizer and Moderna, mRNA is more effective than the traditional vaccines, Johnson & Johnson, which I think are very ineffective. And that would be AstraZeneca as well in Europe, and Sputnik V in Russia, and Sinovac in China. They're just not very effective, the traditionals. The mRNA is more effective, probably will keep you out of the deathbed in the cemetery, may help you get out of the hospital sooner, but is not a panacea, will not prevent you from getting infected as we now see. And now, reportedly, we've got even Pfizer and Moderna CEO saying, well, you're going to need a fourth booster here. You're going to need a fourth shot. I mean, what is this? We got every 6 months, we got to get a shot? Maybe. COVID's here with us. It's not going to go away. That's pretty clear. And that means its impact on the economy is not going to go away either. It will continue to have, every time there's a surge in a new variant, it will continue to have some effect on the economy in 2022 and going forward, just as it did in 2021. Hopefully not as serious a negative effect as it did last year in 2021, but it will continue economically here to have you know, some continued impact, depending on the nature of the variant and so forth. Trump in 2020 screwed up the introduction of the vaccines. Well, Biden in 2021 screwed up providing PPE and test equipment and so forth. Thought that, after Delta, it won't be necessary. And, of course, now we're all scrambling to get test kits, right? Can't get them. Why not? Well, because PPE in general, whether it was intubators from the beginning or test kits now, is mostly produced offshore. You see, part of the problem of the collapse of our medical system, is we've offshored a lot of the supplies. We've let these companies, go to China, go to Taiwan, go to Asia, right, to produce with low-cost wages, right? These necessary supplies. This is strategic. This is like, manufacturing your own jet aircraft, or your own ships. You better have it done in your home country here. But they're not going to push big corporations and big pharma to bring back the production here to the U.S. They talk that talk, but they're not going to do anything about that. But that's part of the problem, why we've had such a difficult response to the COVID investment or the COVID problem here. And 2021 did not really improve that, you see. So we have the great strike of 2021, meaning labor markets are permanently changed. And we have the great inflation, the supply-side-driven inflation of 2021, which means product markets are fundamentally changed. You see, economists don't really understand how all this COVID crash has made permanent changes in the economy, which it has. It's only now becoming a little bit clear. This year, it will become even more clear that there is no return to the old normal. There's a new normal, and we don't know totally what it really looks like. We do know that business now is investing. That's only 10% of the economy. But a lot of that investment is in job replacing artificial intelligence and robotics and so forth. So the investment surge here is going to result in not more jobs created, but over the next several years, fewer jobs created. I've been predicting this for some time, and will share with you an article I've recently written, which is pending publication, on the role of artificial intelligence and these new technologies, cybersecurity and cloud computing and 5G wireless, on jobs, on occupations. Business consultants like McKinsey and Deloitte Touche and others have been predicting that AI, artificial intelligence, will have a serious negative effect on large numbers of occupations, as those occupations are replaced by software, intelligent software, artificial intelligence, and their hardware devices, associated hardware devices. A lot of jobs, simple decision-making jobs, are going to disappear. And now I believe we are on the cusp of an acceleration of that, coming out of the worst of the COVID. And businesses investing heavily in AI that will displace more jobs, which isn't the same thing as business cycle unemployment. This is structural, long-term unemployment. Okay, supply chains problems and issues in 2021 were a good example of product market fundamental changes and shifts. And that's not going away. Supply-side problems will continue. They may not be as intense as they were last year, but they're going to continue. And it's not just a question of getting goods into the Los Angeles port and therefore working the port 24/7. No, that was a lot of spin. Biden says he's going to open the ports. Well, yeah, there was some blockage in the L.A. port, but it was not simply the inability to unload the ships fast enough. It was even more so the inability to get long haul truckers to pick up the stuff and take it to the warehouses inland. You see, we have a big lack of skilled truck drivers in this country. I don't mean the guys driving the vans around town. I mean these 18-wheelers carrying containers and so forth. You know, we have a shortage of those. We have a shortage because the wages of those people have been declining, and who the hell wants to go into a job sector in which wages are declining? So that's part of the problem. We have a big truck driver shortage, and that's one of the chronic changes here in the economy. And that's behind a lot of the port-driven supply-side issues. You know, while they talked about the L.A. port being such a big problem, you just go 400 miles north to the San Francisco port, and they had all excess capacity. Yeah, I mean, they could have brought those containers into San Francisco, if they're Oakland, actually, if they wanted to, right? There's plenty of space up there. So it's, you know, it's... To some extent, to say the supply side problem is a port problem is a misrepresentation of what's actually going on. So the problem with supply will, what was a big issue last year at the ports and other ways, and that will continue this year. And of course, the supply drives the inflation. It's been a supply side inflation. And not really a demand inflation. You know, the amount of demand that was pumped into the economy in March with the American Rescue Plan was quite minimal. The reopening of the economy was much more. Look, you know, maybe $500 billion was actually hit the economy here in the 6 months between March and September. And that compares to... you know, $5 trillion opening up the economy. So, you know, the fiscal stimulus was minimal compared to reopening the economy. But even those together, you know, may have had some, you know, effect on inflation. But the big effect was supply side, right? It was goods inflation, and that's a supply problem. It wasn't really... service inflation. But yet we saw prices rising in service and elsewhere, consumer goods, meat production, eggs, milk, and so forth. Yeah, those prices were going up and are going up. Well, that's not a supply problem. What the hell's going on? Well, we got monopolies here in meat production, maybe four or five companies, right? And they use the general concern about inflation as an excuse to price gouge. That's all. And so did the oil companies, right? We have plenty of oil in this country and imports available. You know, the oil companies jacked up the price at the pump, which is what they always do after a period of losses. In other words, a lot of the inflation of last year, 2021, was really a response by companies who could raise prices doing so to recoup some of the revenue loss they incurred during 2020. So it's price gouging, stupid. It's price gouging going on by companies that can. To some extent, it's a supply side, but it's companies that don't have a supply problem that were manipulating the general concern about supply, and raising their prices. It's not a demand side. In other words, 2021 inflation was not really demand side driven. It was supply side driven in part, and I believe a lot of price gouging going on by corporations that are near monopolies that took advantage of it. And that's continuing, of course. So Biden's you know, big policy initiative to open up the ports, really, you know, a charade, not really the problem, but it looks like he's doing something, right? Yeah. Of course, the Manchin's and Sinema's used the inflation as an excuse for shit-canning the Build Back Better bill and so forth. So all these things are related, you see, all these policies and these economic conditions. What about the Federal Reserve? What about central bank policy in 2021? Well, the Fed just continued opening its fire hose of free money to the bankers and investors. You know, $120 billion a month of free money flowing into the banks and from the banks into private investors. And what did they do with it? Well, most of that turned around and went right into the stock markets and financial markets. And that's why we got these big bubbles, you see. Stocks up 27%, right? I'm talking about the Dow, the NASDAQ, the S&P 500, they're all up 25% more. Right? Well, that's because spending on stocks, you know, driving up the prices of those stocks. Lots of money flowing into financial assets, driving up the price. That indeed was demand driven, right? Made possible by the Fed's free money policy. Continuing. You see, when this whole COVID thing hit in March 2020, the Fed immediately pumped trillions of dollars into the banks, thinking, oh, we may have a crisis in the banking system like we had in 2008 and 2009. Didn't happen. There was no crisis. They didn't need the money, but the Fed threw it at them anyway. And then continued to throw free money at them, $120 billion a month, right, for 18 months. And it was only toward the end of 2021 that the Fed started paring down that amount slowly, right, to $105 billion instead of $120, then $90 billion instead of $120 billion. But the Fed has thrown out, maybe $4 to $5 trillion in 18 months to wealthy investors and bankers and so forth. That's the other bailout, you see? But a bailout that wasn't even necessary, right? It was a big freebie, right? Yeah, you needed to bail out businesses, small businesses and corporations and workers work for them, you know, if you shut down the economy. But you didn't need to bail out the banks. They were fat with cash, as were big corporations that issued trillions of dollars in corporate bonds immediately, sitting on all this cash. And given all this cash, that which they did not invest in the stock market, they gave as dividends and stock buybacks for their shareholders. This year, in 2021, well, in 2021, last year, we will see $1.5 trillion, a record, in stock buybacks and dividend payouts by the Fortune 500 companies to their shareholders, right? $1.5 trillion. That's more than they distributed during Trump. Didn't Trump, the average for his first 3 years were like 1.2, 1.3 trillion. Now it's 1.5 trillion. While everybody is struggling without jobs and income, right? The bankers, the Fed, the conduit, the free money to banks and big investors just kept flowing. The fire hose was opened up and it just kept flowing, and it still is. Only now in 2022, they're talking about, well, maybe we should stop that at some point and start raising interest rates. You see, because if you throw out all that money, it's going to keep interest rates near zero or even negative, right? And that was the case in 2021. The monetary policy was free money, continuing through what's called QE, quantitative easing, free money, and near zero interest rates. While the fiscal policy was, we're going to throw a little bit money out there to keep this thing from falling into a double dip recession, but then we're going to rely on the economy opening up, and we don't want to really follow on with any real fiscal stimulus like the Build Back Better bill, right? But we'll throw some money out there for corporations for infrastructure spending, but not that much either, you see. That was a fiscal monetary policies scenario for 2021, and of course the stock markets and investors benefited greatly because of it, right? COVID. The COVID impact was significant last year with Delta. That's been replaced by Omicron, of course. We'll see. We don't know the effects of Omicron, although, you know, some say it won't be as serious. It'll be like a super cold. Well, let's wait and see. Globally, economically, last year, some big warning signs and fractures in global economy and property developers in Asia, companies like Evergrande and so forth, that owe hundreds of billions of dollars to global investors. And if they couldn't pay it, they would default. And it probably would have set off a chain reaction of property developers globally, and maybe even contagion to Western investors and banks. You know, there's real risk of a global financial meltdown, but China's been able to contain that. And in China, of course, it was interesting to watch how China forced the big owners of Evergrande to put their own cash up to bail out the company. You see, pay its debts, right? In the U.S., we don't do that. See, we don't make the individual CEOs when they screw up to put their own cash up. You see, the government bails them out. Well, in China, they made their CEOs put their money up first. And that's an ongoing crisis point here. We don't know where that's really going to go in 2022, but China has been able to keep it under control. We saw meme stocks being a big deal. Remember at the beginning of last year, GameStop and Robinhood and so forth, right? Just another example how in later stages, when you have all this excess money being provided to investors, even day traders, that it just boosts the financial instability in financial asset markets. And we saw it in cryptos, cryptocurrencies being generated here, record levels, Bitcoin and others, right? Well, that just means there's a lot of demand for speculative investments going on. And cryptos have become the new substitute for gold futures, you see. And people getting rich quick by speculating. Some weak points in the global economy. Watch Turkey. Last year, its currencies collapsed, I think, almost 50%. That is going to continue as an issue here going forward. Watch some of these emerging markets that have borrowed in dollarized bonds. As interest rates in the U.S. rise, the U.S. dollar is going to appreciate, which means their currencies are going to collapse, and they're going to have a harder time paying their interest on their dollarized sovereign and dollarized corporate bonds in emerging markets, places like Argentina and so forth. So that's an ongoing development that needs to be watched here. What are my economic predictions for 2022? Well, I'm going to go out on the limb here and say, contrary to a lot of the forecasters, we're going to see a slowing of GDP here in the first half of the year, particularly the first quarter of the year. I can't see how we're going to get a further growth in GDP with inflation continuing. That's cutting into consumer spending, which is 2/3 of the economy, and with no government stimulus coming, which is another 22% of the economy, right? And with a trade deficit, the U.S. continuing, which also detracts from GDP, the only spot positive I see is business investment in the short run that will result in longer-run job deterioration. That's not a scenario for continued growth, as I see it. And of course, the Omicron thing is going to impact the economy here in the first quarter as well. So I see a slowing of GDP here in the first quarter. Inflation is going to remain. It may be not as robust, but the supply side problems are permanent in the economy and chronic. So I think we're going to be living with inflation of some percent here. Officially, you know, somewhere between 3% and 6% continuing, which is going to cut into real spending and GDP by most households. Another prediction is we're going to see the Fed raise interest rates much faster. They've already signaled that. Last year, they were saying, oh, well, you know, in December, they were saying, the Fed was saying, in the second half of 2022, we'll start raising rates. Now the signal is, March, maybe we'll do it, right? that'll have an impact on stock speculators as well as an impact on the housing market. As interest rates rise, that will make housing unaffordable, slow down housing. Even auto prices have, risen to significant levels here. Cost much more to buy a car today. The auto companies say, it's the chip shortage. I'm not so convinced. I think they're using that to some extent as a way of justifying their price increases, you see. They'd rather sell more cars at a higher price. It's more profitable than selling more cars at a lower price. Okay, so the Fed will continue raising rates even faster than before with all the effects. Supply-side inflation will continue, maybe not as robustly. First quarter GDP will slow. Cryptocurrencies are in trouble. As interest rates rise, cryptos will... experience downward pressure here. Bitcoin more so than the other cryptos, as competition of other cryptocurrencies increases, Bitcoin will weaken in that regard. And also, I think all cryptocurrencies are going to face some headwinds here now that it's pretty clear that government central banks are going to start accelerating their introduction of digital currencies, official digital currencies of the government. Mexico has done this. China's done this. There's all kind of indications that the Fed is preparing to issue its own digital currency. We may see that occur in 2022. If it does, well, that will be significant downward pressure further on Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, right? So that's a significant development among central banks and monetary policy, right? I don't see any meaningful fiscal stimulus in 2022 coming. As I said, it's dead on arrival. Build Back Better is dead on arrival. They may pass a couple parts of it, as they break it out. Maybe 6 months, they'll extend 6 months of the child credit. I don't know. Don't be too optimistic, because it's pretty clear that Manchin and Sinema don't want anything. They've been outmaneuvering the progressive wing of the Democratic Party here, the Sanders and the Jay Pauls and AOC and all those pretty cleverly. Here, that was a important political development of 2021. How the progressives in the Democratic Party got outmaneuvered and blown up by the corporate wing of that party, led by Manchin and Sinema, and now they're in total disarray and pretty much given up on passing anything except maybe some of this partial stuff in 2022. It shows you this whole inside strategy of Bernie Sanders of, let's work within the Democratic Party and get it to adopt some New Deal-like policies has been a total failure. Tells you something about the role of progressivism within the Democratic Party, I think, right? Politically, of course, the big event of last year was... January 6th, right? The insurrection of January 6th. Right? Another big political event, of course, there was a third at least of the population refusing to get vaccinated. A lot of that, I think, is due to the radical right mobilization and using that issue. And, of course, using the delivery mobilizing delivery means of social media and the internet, which is a cancer on the whole society now. Advanced tech, particularly social media, is a cancer eating away at the economy, eating away at culture, eating away at the economic system and the political system. You would not have had January 6th if it weren't for social media. Okay? Period. Right? It's a real cancer. And they're not doing anything about it, and they won't. Right? And that, of course, it becomes the conduit for all crazy conspiracy theories. That's behind a lot of the opposition to vaccination. But part of the responsibility for the poor vaccination results in the U.S. Has to be laid at the doorstep of the bureaucrats in Washington and the healthcare and so forth, with all the contradictory messaging. You know, I mean, just the fact that the first they said, get vaccinated and you'll never get sick. Right. And then they said, well, OK, you know, you may have a breakthrough case, but get a booster and you won't get sick. And now, of course, now they're saying, well, you're going to have booster after booster. You know, that just gives the message to the crazy right wing that, vaccines don't work. Right. It just sort of, you know, bolsters the whole idea that vaccines are a big conspiracy and a big profit-making event by Big Pharma, right? It's not true, of course, but it is true that these vaccines are not as effective as they say, particularly J&J, right? I mean, now they're not even attempting to say, get a booster of J&J. They're saying, go get a booster of mRNA, right? And at least that'll give you some months. It's pretty clear also that vaccines don't have much effect on people whose immune system is totally destroyed, right? If you have a big condition or you're getting radiology for a cancer or something like that, you don't have much of an immune system. And it doesn't matter what the mRNA does. You can't boost an immune system that's pretty much not there, right? And the same thing with older people, natural age, you know, you can't boost something you don't have, right? So a lot of the people who are getting sick, you know, are really people whose immune system cannot be strengthened by these vaccinations. That's true. Or the totally unvaccinated as well. Vaccines have some effect and should be taken, you know, in my view. But the bureaucracy has bungled the whole introduction, the whole messaging of this thing, and played into the right wing here when it comes to schools and shutting down the schools and everything. Okay, continuing on the political side, last year, 2021, we saw a significant acceleration of rolling back democracy, particularly in the red states, right? More voter suppression bills. Over 500 suppression bills were introduced, mostly in these red states, right? And I think something like 39 of them have passed. Over 40 states actually have introduced some kind of voter suppression. And it's not just voter suppression going on. It's the red state legislatures taking over the county election commissioners in these states. In other words, if they don't like the tally of the votes in Democratic areas like Atlanta or something, they just won't count them. You know, they just won't count them. And that's how they're going to help win 2022 midterms here in the House. They're already preparing that. And the Democrats have no strategy to stop it. You know, that's what's really disconcerting, I don't see. They're trying to pass the voting rights bill, but Manchin and Sinema will not allow the filibuster to be lifted to pass the voting rights bill, right? So that Democrat strategy will never really take effect. I might add, though, that Manchin and Sinema were willing to suspend the filibuster rule here to get defense, $768 billion Defense Act passed. Yeah, they're willing to go for that, for the temporarily, you know, suspend the filibuster, which has been suspended, I think, like 100-some times, you know, to get certain bills passed. It's not all that new to suspend a filibuster to get a bill passed, but it's what bill? And you're not going to get support from Manchin and Sinema when it comes to voting rights, period. Politically, we also saw, the Supreme Court you know, bare his canine teeth, his right-wing canine teeth here, you know, with women's rights, Texas and Mississippi, abortion rights, and so forth, right? That was a big development. We're going to see more of that coming here in 2022, more resistance to vaccines. The insurrection, the hearings and insurrection, you know, are almost a joke. They're going so slow, right? And they're picking off the small fry. They're never going to identify the big boys, the big politicians, the big capitalists behind helping coordinate and fund the January 6th insurrection. They'll pick up the low guys, right? But they won't touch the big guys, the McCarthys and others who had a hand in all this, right? This another story, as I already mentioned, politically of 2021 is the progressives being outmaneuvered and pretty much deflated here in the Democratic Party. Climate change, COP21, a big dud, right? Big dud, and even a bigger dud because it's clear the U.S. can't pass anything. And if the U.S. can't, the other countries won't either. The beginning of economic war with China over Taiwan, they're raising that issue. And, of course, the Ukraine, right? They're setting up the straw man, I believe, if things really get bad domestically here in the United States, to provoke some sort of a problem with the Ukraine and with Taiwan. I think the U.S. has been raising the possibility of introducing or increasing the talk about introducing Ukraine into NATO here as a way to provoke Putin and to get Putin to agree to pull back the Nord Stream gas to Germany so that the U.S. Gas companies, which are oil companies, can sell gas to Germany instead, you see. I mean, there's all these issues in European politics that are all affiliated with the Ukraine issue here. But that's a real, that and Taiwan are real trouble spots that could get worse going forward here, right? The U.S. pulled out of Afghanistan last year in August. That was a big issue of 2021. You know, you can't really blame Biden for that. You know, it was the head of that government over there chickening out and running away that caused his whole Afghan army to implode. It would have happened anyway, but boy, he accelerated the whole thing, right? So that was, you know, the developments last year on the political side. My predictions on the political side, there'll be no voting right bills passed or filibuster suspended. The red states will accelerate their voting suppression and other anti-democratic laws and rules here. The Supreme Court will show its continued right swing here, right? Ukraine and Taiwan, particularly Ukraine, could be a real trouble spot going forward in 2022 internationally. So those are my main predictions for 2022 politically. On the economic side, the economy will slow, inflation will continue, supply-side problems will continue, the Fed will raise rates faster, cryptocurrencies are in further pressure as digital currencies are issued by central banks. China will struggle to continue to grow its economy. Inflation will reduce real spending in the U.S. There'll be no meaningful fiscal stimulus, and the COVID variants will continue to impact the economy and society. Okay, that's my review of 2021 and my predictions for 2022. We'll see how it all turns out. I'm out of here.